about the fundamental change. Now, on the basis of that primal longing, the pupil is given counsel to confront himself with the process of fundamental change, because only that longing is true and essential. It is suggested that, for once, he shall not associate that longing with any particular tenet, with any special trend of thought, nor shall he repel them, because he always has to reckon with the possibility that the truth has manifested itself in some way in this world. However, his interest must not be shifted, and his position must be neither for nor against anything. A great inner rest must be cultivated in him, and any desire neutralized, not by suppressing it, but in such a way that there is neither approval nor disapproval, but only vigilant, objective observation. If the pupil can live in this state of mind for some time, the three primary functions of his head-heart system will come to a certain state of quietude. Their wild whirling within this nature will be slowed down. The aural sphere will not, by new speculations, become clouded and damaged further than it already is. And in this state of rest, the warped, critical faculty of the mind, which is innate in every human being as a kind of sense organ, is given the opportunity to detach itself from habits, blood, and guided intellectual conditioning. It will recover from the constraint under which it has always had to function. The pupil now stands within the portal of the fundamental change. If the pupil is only able to maintain the neutralization of his desires long enough, thereby rejecting all metaphysical and philosophical speculations, the freedom of his thinking faculty will be gradually restored, although still within the confines of structural bondage. The thinking faculty is set free from the chaos of inclination, education, and blood. It is now up to the pupil to courageously fight the inclinations and blood instincts ever trying to draw him back into his old life. In this stage, let him ignore every impelling authority and, above all, learn to efface his own personality in all things. Nothing on the spiritual path is more salutary, more important, and more absolute than completely giving up the I. And generally speaking, people fear nothing more than having to practice this very renunciation of the self. In this stern reality of life, self-maintenance so runs in man's blood that even being on the spiritual path, he wants to assert his I, which being of this nature, is transitory. Should the reader of these pages harbor such a natural fear and yet wants to let his I bask in the spiritual sunlight, let him then understand that the true self, the true personality, the true man, can never be given up, even if man wanted to do so. Finding the true self is the very thing at issue. The eye of nature must be effaced in the process of fundamental change. If the pupil succeeds in accomplishing this effacement, something of true freedom will begin to shine in the system of his microcosm. The pupil then crosses the portal of the fundamental change.